Ladies and gentlemen, step right up. Let's go see the elephant. We're on a roll on a honey. I'm a roll on a honey, and you can't keep up with me.
Welcome to the show, folks. That's right. You got the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show coming to you live on this chilly, wintry Florida afternoon, if you want to call this winter. But it is for us anyway. It's going to get a little chillier tonight, so please wrap up those plants and take care of those pets. In the meantime, we're going to keep you enlivened with some hot topics tonight, and we got two full hours for some great radio lined up here for you. 407-774-8255 is the number as we come to you live on FM 105.5 and AM 660, The Answer. I am Christopher Hart. The chairman of the board is not yet back from Sanctuary City. Who knows? He might be looking for some real estate in gay neighborhoods out there, you know, just to make him angry. But he'll be back soon. In the meantime, in the studio with me today is the commanding general of the American Adversaries Army. That'd be, of course, Colonel Danny McKnight. Colonel, thanks for being in here with us today.
Well, happy to be here, and for a change, I don't have to put up with Mike McBeth tonight. That's pretty cool.
It's going to be a lot different, isn't it?
Yeah, it'll be different.
All right. And, of course, Nicholas Cicero is on the bridge, so you can, of course, give us a call at any time. 407, as I said, 407-774-8255 is the number. We also have another pair of tickets to give away to the Old Florida Outdoor Festival. These tickets are for Friday. That's this Friday when we will be there doing a live remote broadcast. Love to see you come out and join us out there. These tickets go for $20 a piece, so this pair is worth $40 to you if you happen to get your hands on them tonight. We'll do that a little bit later on in the show, though, not right now. But we will start taking contestants right now, and we'll take them throughout the show today for what we're calling our Pick 5 contest. We did this for the Iowa caucus. We'll do it again for this, and maybe even for the South Carolina election. We'll see. But what we want to know is who's going to win tonight in New Hampshire. We want to know the top five on the Republican side, and then it seems like a done deal on the Democrat side, but a lot of the news talk today has been about how the polls in Iowa are notoriously unreliable. So if you want to take a stab, no one's picked Hillary to win tonight, but if you want to take a stab and pick her to win, you can do that as well. So who's going to win on the Democratic side, and who's going to be the top five on the GOP side? And for instance, Jeannie, who was our winner last time, she had all five correct. This time she has picked Trump to win, Rubio to place, Ted Cruz to show, followed up by Jeb and John Kasich. And those do seem to be the top five in the polling. Once again, that we are hearing all about today, which is notoriously unreliable. So we've already got about a dozen or so contestants. If you want to get in on that contest, you will win if you win a $20 gift card to Cafe Positano. And, of course, Liar, Liar, Pantsuit on Fire bumper sticker, and who knows, we might throw a t-shirt or something else in there too. So that's what you'll be playing for, so you can call in with those entries anytime during the show. I got a lot I want to talk to you in terms of military stuff, but you know, the New Hampshire primary is tonight. And this campaign, as I like to think, is gone where no campaigns go before. And especially when it comes to Donald Trump. I thought it interesting and ironic last night that he, via a member of his audience who might or might not have been a plant, who knows? All I can say is Don is in the WWE Hall of Fame, he ended up calling Ted Cruz one of the things that Hillary Clinton is using as a reason to vote for her. I don't know how else to put it. I don't even want to go near what was really said, okay?
Yeah, I think although, it was probably, blocked out or something.
Yeah, but that's part of his appeal, actually, is that he comes across as vulgar as he is, one of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does.
I know, Colonel, you're not a big fan of him, but let me ask a serious question. He has said he wants to rebuild the military, mm-hmm. And that he would rely on military professionals to guide him with his military decisions. At least from that perspective, isn't he talking the right talk?
Well, I want to say that I don't dislike him. I don't like everything he says. I think sometimes he's over the top.
Obviously.
And to say the least. But I won't say that I dislike him. And he is sort of the front runner when you look at what's been going on all this time.
If these polls are anywhere near correct.
Yeah, and we'll see sort of what happens after tonight. It'll be interesting, but I think he's far enough in front tonight, you know. But from the military perspective, I want somebody that's going to be the president of the United States of America that's going to put the military back where it belongs. And it has been devastated in the past 2 years. Obama has successfully did what he wanted to do. He's made us probably as weak as we have ever been. And in numbers, for one thing, but also how many ships we don't have now that they've mothballed, basically, and put them away.
Aircraft.
I mean, you can look at the assets, not just the people. Look at the assets that have been done. We're probably as weak as I have seen us since the Jimmy Carter era, in all honesty.
Maybe even weaker.
Probably weaker. Especially when you compare it to what else is out in the world today.
Right.
I mean, China, you know, they're scary, you know. North Korea, scary. Russia, you got to be aware, you know. And it's not that I think Putin doesn't know what he's doing. He does. But it's scary in terms of what could we do to react to anything that he might do. And so I look at it from that perspective, what's going on in the rest of the world, how do we stack up now? There is nobody that can honestly say we're number one. We are the world power that we have been. And I don't like not being the world power because there's too many things that can happen.
Well, it leaves us vulnerable.
That's exactly right. And that's what he has done and accomplished, President Obama has. And I think he's got the last year to finish off everything he wants to do.
So you would, and it sounds what you're saying, you would agree with, and I know you don't watch the debates, but you might have heard some of the sound bites, Rubio the other night saying over and over again, and he's being faulted for repeating this over and over again, but what he's saying has kind of gotten lost, and that is that Barack Obama intended to do everything he has done to this country.
I think he had a checklist. He's been going down it ever since he took office. Well, President Obama has.
Yeah.
And I agree. Yeah. So Marco Rubio repeated himself. Come on, folks. Put your big boy pants and get on over that. Get over that. You know, come
right.
on.
Right.
It's not the end of the world. But he's right because Barack Obama has done exactly what Marco Rubio said. He has absolutely made us weak. And the military being weak is a scary thing, especially today with all the refugee issues, all the ISIS issues and everything like that. And it hadn't gotten better.
Yeah.
It's got worse and worse and worse every day.
Now, when you look at these people running for president, you're obviously looking from the perspective, at least part of what you're looking for, is their qualifications to be commander-in-chief.
Mm-hmm.
Would you care to rank them in the order in which you would say would be, in your opinion, the best to the worst?
I would probably, if I had to say who would... I think would be the best commander in chief right now, based on the things that
I have
heard and read.
Right now, today,
I would say Ted Cruz.
Okay,
and I would follow him closely with probably Marco Rubio.
Okay,
and then I'd probably throw Trump in there.
Okay, so
and
those are the
others,
top.
That's what I'd have as the top three.
And those kind of, are, especially if you still look at the national polling, those are the top three who have risen to the top. So
Right. Obviously
they're showing something. Leadership skills, that sort of thing. Decisiveness.
Yeah, and they really know, they understand, and they're saying it. We are really weak right now.
And
we have got to change it. We've got to fix it. And that's what they're saying, and that's what I like. Now, if you want to talk about who's the worst, you put Hillary and Bernie Sanders, and both of them are awful.
Right.
Because Bernie Sanders despises the military. I've listened to him a morning show one time accidentally. I didn't know who the man was, really.
Oh, yeah.
And when I heard him, I thought, my Lord, where did he come from?
Well, guess where a lot of that money for his free college and all these other, you know, giveaways would come from?
Yeah.
The Pentagon budgets, right?
Yeah. But so both the Democratic side is absolutely, if either one of them were to become president of the United States, we would continue down the road that Barack Obama started, and I'm not sure we can ever stop it if it happens.
All right, thanks. Having said that, the movie 13 Hours came out about 3 weeks ago now, almost three weeks ago. I went and saw it. The reaction I came away from, and I told Chris Tonto Peronto this in an interview with him, was I came away enraged, ashamed, and motivated. Have you seen the movie, and what did you feel?
We went and saw it on the Friday that it came out.
Okay.
And
which, by the way, folks, Colonel McKnight doesn't do.
Yeah, exactly. I was just to say that. And, Linda knows that, you know, that I don't like to go to theaters, and especially to see those kind of movies.
Right.
But I did because I wanted to see it quickly. I had a good idea what was in it, but I really wanted to see it.
And you had promised Chris you would do it.
And I did. And I actually did have to take a break and towards the end of the movie and probably in the last 30 minutes of it. And I sort of stood off to the side. I gave another excuse, but it worked out okay.
Yeah. Well,
the movie, it bothers me watching it. Because I know Chris, and I know what they went through, but now I have seen it. And if those people don't think it's true, they need to talk to Chris and his guys that did survive. They talk to them. If you don't want to believe the movie, fine. Be stupid. That's fine. But listen to Chris, okay? And Chris talks a lot around the country, and so do the other guys. So they know what they're talking about, and they were the ones that were there to help make it be right. And so people need to. I'm like you. Enraged, that's a very polite way to put it, but a good word to use, but a polite way to put it.
Right.
There are people right now that should be in jail for what happened, and we know who that is. And for those people to say that it doesn't really matter, it matters a lot. We had an ambassador killed. We had an ambassador killed because people were not willing to make the hard right decisions and take care of business. Yes, it enraged me, just like it did you, and probably I hope most of America that's seen it. And I will tell most of America, the ones that didn't see it, go see the movie. And if you don't think that it's real and it's telling the truth, you just let me know. I'll be glad to explain the details to you, because that right there should keep some person from ever being the president of the United States, and we know who we're talking about, the former Secretary of the State.
Oh, yeah. The movie makes quite clear that there were assets being mobilized, serious assets.
That's right.
You had F-16 fighter jets, it looks like, that were being mobilized. You had rapid deployment forces.
AC-130 available.
That were, exactly. Mm-hmm. And according to Chris, in an interview that I conducted with him a couple of weeks ago, that those assets were being mobilized until about midnight, and then all of a sudden, it stopped. It just stopped. Now, your experience, military command, what would have stopped that in its tracks?
The only thing that could stop that is a person of very high rank saying there will be no more involvement, there will be no support. And unfortunately, I can say that from the perspective of 1993, you know, people making decisions. When you have 100 people cut out of a task force 30 hours before you depart to go to Mogadishu, do you think it didn't have an impact? Those people that died at the second crash site over in Somalia, they would not have died if we'd had those other 100 people there. So see, now what we've seen is the same type thing years later. years later in Benghazi. And it's amazing how they're so similar in many ways.
And similar to the extent that there was a Clinton right there in the middle of it all. Right?
Amazing, isn't it?
A Clinton,
yeah.
Bill Clinton first time, Hillary Clinton the second time.
That's right. That's right. And neither one of them has ever owned up to that they ever did anything wrong.
Right. Right.
And as you know from reading my book, I've tried to make that very clear.
Yes.
And it was in real simple language because I wrote it, I promise you.
That's right.
Simple, okay.
His book is called The Streets of Mogadishu. It's an excellent book. It's a primer on leadership and leadership skills, and it also explains the Mogadishu mission and what doomed it. Because of political correctness and politicians who didn't know what they were doing meddling in serious military affairs where they had no business being.
Chris, I did just talk to Chris Peranto today. We had a nice conversation today, and we talked because I had seen the movie, and you know he's doing well, though. He really is. He's getting out there, and he's speaking, and he's doing well.
Well, you know, he has that sense of humor, you know, that dark sense of humor that came out in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he expressed, you know, in the interview with him that's, you know, what helps him. You know, that's part of it, that and God.
Yeah.
You know, his belief in God and his faith.
Well, Linda and I are going to get to see him a couple times this year before it's over, so we've already got it on our calendar a couple of times we're going to get to see him.
Yeah, and he may be coming to Daytona or at least somewhere here in Central Florida later this summer. And if and when he does, we will certainly let you folks know all about it.
Yep.
All right? Okay. In the meantime, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we got a lot more to talk about with Colonel McKnight, including a revelation today by, intelligence chief Clapper, that ISIS is projected to attack the United States in the United States this year. We'll see what the colonel has to say about that on the other side of this break. All right, there you go. That's our ode to B.O., the Dancing Queen. That's right. Jordan gets the Warrior King. We get the Dancing Queen. And we saw the Dancing Queen's colors, so to speak, in the Benghazi affair when assets that could have been used to save the lives of Ambassador Stevens, not to mention Sean Smith, Glenn Doherty, and Tyrone Woods, and those assets were called off, evidently because they didn't want to be seen as escalating or having a real problem in Libya. So that would be something that would definitely, in most people's books, disqualify the Secretary of State from ever being commander-in-chief. Because, and the real irony of it all is, of course, that commercial that she ran against Barack Obama about, you remember the 3 a.m. phone call?
Yep.
Is somebody, and because one of the emails that was released showed that the Pentagon was trying to get someone on the phone and no one would answer the phone.
That's right.
It was like five
and a half hours that she was totally, totally out of the net. And that wasn't by accident.
Yeah.
That was on purpose. There's no doubt, because she did not want to have to answer and tell anybody to do anything. So she basically just stayed out of it, you know. And somebody, you know, made some bad decisions not to give the assets that were needed. But, you know, when I listened to her talk about, you know, Benghazi and talk about how the families must not have understood what I said at Andrews Air Force Base when the bodies were brought back.
Yeah.
They didn't understand. It was amazing how one of the fathers wrote every word down, didn't it? And he knew exactly what was said.
Yeah.
And Sean Smith's mother, you know, she said she didn't have any question in her mind what was said to her there.
Oh, no.
You know, but all of that's changed now that this person, you know, that was the former Secretary of State now wants to be president. And so now she don't remember any of those things being said that they're talking about. She says they didn't really understand what I said. So, see, it's one lie after the other. Let's be honest about it. And that's what it is.
Oh, yeah.
And if our country, if the people let her get away with those lies and even think about voting for her to be the next president of the United States of America, we've got deeper troubles than we have ever seen.
Well, unfortunately, that may be the case. Hopefully not. Today, the director of national intelligence, John Clapper, said that ISIS most likely will attack within the United States this year, and that they are, and I quote him now, successfully infiltrating all refugee groups coming into this country. No surprise to us here, right?
No, we've talked about this before. I mean, they're going to come from the north, from Canada, because they, you know, the new
Prime Minister there,
he's just sort of opened it up. Y'all, all y'all that want to come into Canada. Well, guess where they're going to go next? They ain't going to stay in Canada.
Right.
They're going to come south.
Right.
And so we're going to end up with most of them here before it's over with. That is what's going to lead to exactly what you're talking about. ISIS is, they're already here. You know it. I know it. Other people know it. We keep arresting people, as a matter of fact. So they're here.
Well, not only that, but he's saying there are more on the way.
They are. And they'll come from the south, too, because we know we can't stop them coming from across the border in the south. We haven't been able to stop, you know, even the Mexicans or those from Honduras or Nicaragua or anything coming across. So that's where they're going to infiltrate very easily, is with those other groups of people.
Right.
There's no doubt about it. And it is becoming very dangerous. And as I've told you before, I don't worry about it for me and people of my age too much. I worry about it for the grandkids, because their future's at stake every day right now.
All right. Okay, folks. We got to take a break. Anyways, we'll be right back after this short break. Please stay with us.
FM 104.
Tough guy. Ho! Ho! And away we go with the show. And that's a close friend of ours, Colonel. Of course, you know Hacksaw, right?
Yep. You have him and Mike McBeth sitting the other side of this table a few times. That's dangerous, let me tell you. You know, you got both of them over there.
Yeah. It is indeed, especially when they get wound up.
But both are great Americans, so that's what counts.
Indeed they are. Indeed they are. Okay, welcome back to the show. That's right. You're in the right place, folks. You are listening to the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show. Once again, we're coming to you live as we can be on FM 105.5 and AM 660, The Answer. You're welcome to give us a call. We're taking contest entries, our Pick 5 contest. We haven't had any yet tonight. We've got about a dozen so far, but we want you to pick the top five winners in tonight's GOP primary, and then, of course, you can pick the Democrat side. And we also have some Old Florida Outdoor Festival tickets to give away, and we just got some more, so we're going to do that here shortly. But first of all, real quick, I am Christopher Hart, along with Colonel Danny McKnight, Commanding General of the American Adversaries Army, and now Aubrey Kahn, a firm Foundation Home Inspections, and Talk to the Experts Radio show, live show every Saturday at 1 here on these same stations. He's in the studio with us. And the Colonel brought his wife, Linda, and his stepson, Tim. So we're here. You're there. Give us a call with those contest entries or any questions or comments about the show. Before we go any further, do we have the birthday music queued up in there, Nick? Can we punch that in real quick? Because I would like to wish a very, very happy birthday to Joan Shepherd, mother of our great friend and sponsor, Jerry Shepherd of Jerry's Mercedes-Benz, Jerry's MB. You guys got to meet Jerry and Janice Shepherd. Great folks. They had dinner with us at Cafe Positano. So happy birthday to you, Joan. And we hope that you have many, many more, and that this birthday is very happy and special for you. And I know your son, I hope I'm not going to tell any secrets, but that your son is going to be seeing you tonight. I hope I didn't spoil it, Jerry.
Uh-huh. All right. I hope he's not giving her a BMW.
No, he won't be driving over the BMWs, no. All right, so happy birthday, Joan. Okay. Colonel, we were talking about ISIS. The director of intelligence today said, and this was in testimony before Congress, that we're looking at being attacked by ISIS this year within the United States of America. If that were to happen, what do you think that would do to the psyche of America?
You know, the psyche of America right now has sort of already been impacted because of the things that have occurred, whether it's the refugee problem, whether it's ISIS, not even on our soil per se. They're here. We know that.
Right.
If that does happen, just think back to how it was when 9/11 happened. The problem with this is I don't believe it's going to be one place. I believe it's going to be multiple places. And I think that's what they will try to do.
In a coordinated attack.
Yes, they won't hit us just in one place. They'll hit us in more than one place. And it may not all be on the same day, but it will happen. And if they're going to do what I think they would do, they would hit multiple days in a row. Because can you imagine how America is going to have to react if you've hit 6 days in a row somewhere?
Right.
You know, across the country. I'm very, very afraid of that. I know our system of intelligence is phenomenal, and we've seen that happen. You know, we do. But there's too many ways. I mean, here was a plane that took off in Somalia from Mogadishu. What the heck were they doing there anyway?
Right.
But anyway, they get a bomb on the plane.
Right.
Now, of course, the guy that, you know, got blown up and went out, I mean, he didn't do his job very well because he didn't bring the plane down. But that's a simple example of how easy it still is for these things to happen. And there's no way we're going to stop 100% of it. It is impossible. If that happens in our country and it happens in about 6 days in a row, the psyche of our country, everybody's going to be hunkered down and scared to death. That's what's going to happen.
And, of course, there's a big difference between this president and the president we had on 9/11.
Yes.
So the response would be, I would imagine, markedly different. One of, okay, don't everybody panic. You know, this is just an isolated incident. These people aren't real Muslims. You know, the standard line that we're getting right now.
Yeah, and think about it. It's an election year, too.
Right.
Think about if this happens towards the end of this election year when it's time for people to really, you know, decide who they're going to support.
Right.
And can you imagine the turmoil that will occur if the election is not finished and done and then this happens? Have you ever heard of something called martial law?
You think that could be a reality?
I think it could be a very big reality if that happened and President Obama says, I can't leave. I have to, you know, enact martial law right now because of this. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, I've got to wave the white flag.
Yeah.
The white flag of surrender. Yeah.
All right. Well,
and see, that's what I think could happen if ISIS gets in. They're in on a small way now, but it's so easy for them to get in a big way.
Right. And, of course, one thing they would just love to do is influence the outcome of an American election.
That's exactly right. And that's the reason the intel people think it could happen. I think they're probably on target.
Okay. You mentioned the intelligence community. The other night in the debates, the question came up about waterboarding. When the question was, and by the way, this is why the use of the word that I'm not going to go there today was used last night, because mm-hmm. it was in response to Ted Cruz's response the other night at the debate when asked if he thought waterboarding should be used. And he kind of hemmed and hawed and basically said no. Then the question was posed to Donald Trump, who said, oh, you better believe it, and I'll do a whole lot worse than that. What are your thoughts on that?
On the use of waterboarding.
Yeah.
I think it is a resort that sometimes you have to use. I think you have to resort to that on occasion. I don't think it's the number one choice. I think there's other things we can do and still get what we need. But I think there are times when you have people that will not cooperate and give you information. And therefore, I know waterboarding is a very realistic thing that works, plain and simple, okay? Waterboarding is something that some of us have dealt with in terms of training-wise.
Right.
Because sometimes you train to know what can happen.
Right.
You know, so that's what sure. I mean by saying that. I've never been involved with doing it to anybody, okay? But I understand it very well, and it generally does not kill you, okay, as long as you're willing to open your mouth and talk,
right?
Okay,
yeah.
That's what they're saying. That's what we have to be able to do, okay?
Yeah.
Did we waterboard people down in Guantanamo Bay? Yeah, we probably did, didn't we?
Yeah.
Okay, and we got a lot of information, okay? But, of course, a lot of that's been thrown away because Obama's let everybody go.
Not only has he let everybody go, he hasn't brought in any new people to interrogate,
no.
to get information from. And the reason why this is now very pertinent is, of course, because of the testimony that we heard from Clapper today. And that is that these people are here. They're mm-hmm. plotting to attack us. Let's just say the FBI picks one of these characters up, right? And they have other information that indicates that there is something big afoot. They now have one of them in their custody. What are we going to do? right? The question becomes, what are we going to do? Yep. Are we going to sacrifice the stability, perhaps, of the United States, not to mention many lives, so that we don't upset this guy's, you know, quote-unquote rights?
Well, if we do get somebody, the current regime is in command still, President Obama, the only way we will use waterboarding and really get the answers we need is not letting him know about it. Plain and simple.
Right.
Don't ask his permission, because sometimes it's better not to ask permission and just worry about the consequences later on.
Yeah.
I mean, really, I mean, let's be honest about it. That's what I believe. Sometimes you just don't ask.
Yeah.
You do what you think is the right thing.
Right.
Okay. You do the hard right, easy wrong, as we've talked about before, and then you worry about it later, you know. And, yeah, it may cause some consternation for people after that. But if you get the answers you need and you save people's lives, that's the bottom line right there, okay? And that's the reason I think it may be necessary to continue to use those kind of tactics, if necessary, plain and simple.
Okay, and I don't want to misrepresent anything here. So Carl is correcting me. Thank you, Carl. He reminds me that, yes, indeed, Cruz did say that it should be used, but very rarely and only when necessary.
Yeah.
So
I knew Donald Trump said it very openly.
Yeah,
Cruz, I thought it said something, and I think that's about what I thought. So,
but
I agree.
But unfortunately, and this is sort of a lesson in the two men's styles, and that is that Trump's better believe I am is going to be something worse for him too. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was no mistaking where he stood on the issue, and obviously, I mistook where Ted Cruz stood on the issue.
Yeah.
So it, you know, there's something to be said about, you know, just being bold and in your face.
Well,
sometimes.
I think Donald Trump even was the one that said, why would I hesitate to do something like that? Because look at the beheadings that they have done,
right,
talking about ISIS,
right,
and done it very clearly in front so that we get to see it. And how many Americans have gone through that? Okay,
right.
So would I worry about waterboarding somebody that was an ISIS person associated with that? I wouldn't even hesitate to do that.
Right.
I mean, let's remember what they did to American citizens. They beheaded them.
Right.
And have people already forgot that? Short memories.
Evidently so. Now, John McCain obviously is entirely against this. He says that this makes us more like our enemy, if you will. And also, and this is a big argument that I hear over and over again, this encourages our enemy to do the same thing. First of all, does our enemy need any encouragement to mistreat our prisoners of war? Okay, I didn't think so. And second of all, and especially when you're talking about, say, apples and oranges, does this compare in any way to the treatment that the North Vietnamese gave John McCain at the Hanoi Hilton?
Right. And another great example, the movie Unbroken.
Right. Yeah.
What about the movie Unbroken? What about what was done to Americans there, and Mrs. Zamperini specifically?
Right. And that was just as a matter of course. That wasn't really to torture them for information. It was just to treat them bad.
It was just, that's right. And, you know, people say, well, we shouldn't lower ourselves to what they do. It's not a matter of lowering ourselves. It's a matter of getting the job done.
Right.
And if the job has to be done by doing something that's a little bit tougher than people can accept, they need to close their eyes, shut their mouth, and just go sit in a corner and let the people that need to do it do it.
Right.
Okay? I mean, it is. It's what you're saying is right on the money. They're going to be doing what they do. And people say, well, don't lower ourselves. It's not a matter of lowering ourselves. It's a matter of securing the United States of America and taking care of our citizens. And that's what's important.
Absolutely. And by the way, we're sort of talking around the issue of rules of engagement here. And you know from up close that the rules of engagement are very restrictive as they are now.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I will say about Ted Cruz, he's very, very clear about this, is that he would change those rules of engagement and he would do it immediately. And I assume that that would be something that would have to be job one, day one, wouldn't it?
I think that, yeah, that's right up front. That has to be changed. Ever who takes over, and hopefully the right kind of person, has got to make changes, and they can't wait 6, 8, 10 months to do it. That's right. They need to already have a plan on what they're going to do to make things better and change the things now.
Yeah. You know, Lara and I had the opportunity to do a benefit dinner for Herschel Woody Williams, a Medal of Honor recipient for his actions on Iwo Jima. And he was a flamethrower guy. And he when he spoke that night, he said, and I'll never forget this, he said, if we fought World War II with the same rules of engagement that we're tasking our military with today, we'd all be speaking Japanese and or German.
Exactly. I remember the comment. I remember hearing that comment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's right. And he's absolutely right.
Yeah. So, you know, it's all about getting the job done.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
That's what the bottom line is.
Exactly. All right. Bottom line is now we have to take a break. When we come back, we got more of the American Adversaries live on FM 105.5 and AM 660, The Answer. And I got some big news about Hugh Hewitt on the other side of the break, who's going to be handling some live election night coverage tonight. But he's got even bigger news that was let out of the box last night. On the road again. Look at old Aubrey over there doing the chicken dance. No, wait a minute. Wait a minute. No, it goes like this, Aubrey.
I did not eat any of that cereal this morning.
Okay, welcome back. You didn't have your Cap'n Crunch, huh? Welcome back to the show. You got the American Adversaries, and we're here. We're live. Before we get back to the conversation, just a couple of things real quick. First of all, I want to wish congratulations and all the luck in the world and have great shows and break your leg and all that sort of thing to Hugh Hewitt, who is going to be taking over Bill Bennett's morning show. Of course, that's 6 to 9 right here on AM 660, The Answer, and FM 105.5, 6 to 9 AM. Bill's going to be stepping back and being a special reporter, and that will happen on April the 4th, Hugh announced on his show last night. So once again, congratulations to you, Hewitt. And if you guys need somebody to sit in for a while on that 7 to 10 o'clock national hour, you know, we volunteer. Yeah, we're off the air here at 7. We could do another 3 hours, right, Aubrey?
No problem.
Anyway, once again, congratulations to you, to Hugh Hewitt. And speaking of Hugh, he's going to be doing live election night coverage tonight from New Hampshire. He is in New Hampshire. He couldn't make it to the studio last night. He was snowed in at his hotel, but he promised to be there tonight. And that's going to be live results and commentary as the results come in from the New Hampshire primary. They are mostly on Eastern Standard Time up there. I guess there's a couple of parts of the state, actually some of the bigger metropolitan areas, that are on Mountain Time, or excuse me, Central Time, because most of the polls close at 7, but there are some that close at 8 o'clock tonight. And then the results will be flowing in. So please keep your dial set right here for Hugh Hewitt coming up right after our show at 7 o'clock with live results from New Hampshire. Colonel, the Pentagon has recently announced that they, because now women are being accepted in combat positions, that they should be allowed to, I suppose would be the way to put it, or required to would be another way to put it, register for the draft. Your thoughts on that?
Yes, they should be required to register for the draft, because if we're going to require it to be opened up to women in the military to be in the infantry, to be in the armor, and all those other things that they want to do, they should register for the draft just like every other Americans had to at 18 years old. Plain and simple. It's not even a hard question to give an answer to. Well, I can't believe that there's even people out there that would say, no, they shouldn't. Well, yes, they should, because if you're going to say, no, they shouldn't, fine, they shouldn't be in the infantry then. So you can't have both, you know, one way and do one way and one the other.
Okay, but my logic professor from Miami-Dade Community College would be mad at me if I didn't point out that that was an if-then statement. In other words, if we're going to say that women are going to be in combat positions, mm-hmm. then would you have the same feeling if women weren't required to be in combat positions?
No, I've always felt that they should be required to
register for the draft.
Plain and simple. I mean, there's been women in the military for a long time, so why didn't we always have that standard? Every American reaches the age of 18, whether you're male or female, you should be required to register for the draft. It's plain and simple.
Having said all of that, can you foresee a scenario where they would reinstitute the draft?
Right now, I don't. I really don't see that. I hope that when this year is over and we get to the next year,
a new president,
and we start doing the right things again, I think we will get people coming into the military that's going to want to be there, because right now they can't, because we're downsizing so much. You know, we've already lost so many great Americans that, you know, didn't get to retire and everything else because, well, we don't need you anymore. I think that it will change if we get the right kind of person in as a commander-in-chief. I think we will see those kind of things change.
Could a new commander-in-chief go to those now ex-military people and say, hey, we want you back?
I guess they could, but I'm not sure many of them would say yes, in all honesty. You know, I'm really not sure that they would want to, they would turn around and come back in, because we're talking about a year or so they would have been out. And, you know, they might even have a little distaste for that. And then there'll be those that say, you bet I'll go. So you're going to have a 50-50 on that one. I really believe that. I don't think it could go one way or the other totally. But if the offer was made, I'm sure there are some out there that would say, yeah, I want to go back and I want to finish what we started. And I want to finish my career because that's what I wanted. And some of them got out with 15 and 16 years.
And, of course, 20 years would get them a pension.
That's
retirement.
Correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they were forced to get out.
Oh, yeah. They were handed the old pink slip, we'll call it.
And you've been very concerned about the rate of mid-level commanders leaving the military.
Mm-hmm.
Are many of them of the age where they could come back?
Yeah. If you were like a lieutenant colonel level, you could still come back. You still got, you know, that's that you probably maybe got 18 to 20 years in service. You could serve another good 10, 12 years. Yeah, you could do that. So, yeah, they could come back. They really could. It's just a matter of how do they feel about coming back.
Right.
You know,
imagine a lot of that would have to do with the new commander in chief.
No doubt. And once again, I still see weaknesses in our military leadership right now. And I'm talking about the generals and them. I think the Marine that is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs.
Dempsey.
Dempsey was the Army.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's right.
That we got rid of, thank
this
goodness.
This is Dunford, I think.
Yeah.
You're right.
But
okay.
I think he is the right guy. He's fighting hard to do the right things. Problem is he gets very little support from above him. And he's willing to step on toes. He's done that. I see the Army four-star who's chief of staff of the Army, General Miley. And I'm very unimpressed. I think General Dempsey must have briefed him before he took over, because I see him doing some of the same things. Yeah, I think this would be a good idea because it will make people happy. You know, well, we ain't about happy and glad, okay? And I see the leadership really, really failing, and that bothers me more than anything.
Okay, that is Colonel Danny McKnight. He is the author of the excellent book, The Streets of Mogadishu, which is about leadership skills and leadership qualities, and about the mission in Mogadishu that Bill Clinton's fingerprints are all over, and that's why there were many more casualties than needed to be. And then, of course, you jump ahead to 2012 in Benghazi, and you got another Clinton's fingerprints all over an incident where more people ended up killed than needed to be. Streets of Mogadishu, you can buy that book at Danny's website, DannyMcKnight.com. That's DannyMcKnight.com. And if you like, he'll personalize that, autograph it for you, and part of the proceeds of that book go to help wounded warriors, not the Wounded Warrior Project, but wounded warriors around this country that he focuses on. Okay, so please focus on staying with us. We got another big hour to go, and we'll be right back.
Intelligence Conservative, FM 105.5, AM 660. The Answer, WORL, Altamont Springs, Orlando. A service.
Ladies and gentlemen, step right up. Let's go see the elephant.
welcome back to the show, or welcome to the show if you're just now tuning in. Thank you very, very much for being with us. In either case, we want to invite you to give us a call at 407-774-8255 as we come to you live on FM 105.5 and AM 660, The Answer. That's right, you got the American adversaries. It is drive time and now prime time here, and we're looking forward to those phone calls. We got some great tickets to give away to the Old Florida Outdoor Festival. We'll do that here in just a few minutes. And if you want to get in on our Pick 5 contest, who are going to be the top five winners tonight in the New Hampshire primary on the GOP side? And if you want to take a stab at the Democrat side, too, as well. And you'll win a $20 gift card to Cafe Positano, a Liar Liar Pantsuit on Fire bumper sticker, some other cool bumper stickers, and who knows what else we might throw in the prize package. But that's up for grabs for our Pick 5 contest. In the meantime, I am Christopher Hart. Colonel Danny McKnight, Commanding General of our American Adversaries Army, is still in the studio with us. And Aubrey Kahn has stepped out briefly, but in has stepped Rick Brown. Rick, thank you for being on the show with us today.
Thank you, Chris. It's always a pleasure.
All right. He's got one of the greatest radio voices in the business, I tell you what. Rick is a local businessman. He is formerly of the Winter Springs City Council. I know you people in Winter Springs appreciate Rick. And he's also with Honor Flight Central Florida. He is a volunteer with them. And, of course, he has that in common with Colonel McKnight and his wife because they're Honor Flight Space Coast. Is that what yours
yep.
is? Honor Flight mm-hmm. Space Coast. So, once again, thanks for what you guys are doing for our vets.
We love it. It's an exciting thing to do. And the look on their faces just makes you get up and do it over and over and over again.
Yeah. The thing that Linda's really fell in love with, okay, besides me, of course, but is when they come back in at the airport. She and her daughter now love to go over there and be there for that part.
Greet them back.
She said just seeing their faces when they come back in, you know, to the airport there, you know, from the trip and everything. She says it really is. And see, we don't get to see it if you're, you know, escorting one of them because you're behind them. So you don't really get to see them.
Right.
So it really is. Rick's exactly right.
It really is spectacular when you see these biggest, baddest Marines and infantry guys come up, and they're all in wheelchairs, and the first thing they do is burst into tears.
That's exactly right.
They're just so incredibly grateful.
I was going to say it's tears of appreciation.
Absolutely.
Yeah, tears of joy.
It makes it so meaningful for everybody involved.
Yeah, and of course, we pointed out, we alert you folks when they are doing an honor flight, and you got one coming up in the spring.
We got one coming up May 9th.
May 9th.
We're actively recruiting for veterans and for volunteer guardians.
Guardians, yep.
And we're getting ready to roll. We're going to do one in April. We'll do two more before the end of the year. I think one in June and then one probably in August or September.
And you can go to honorflightcentralflorida.org if you'd like to find out more information, if you want to sign up as a guardian. And if you know a veteran or you are a veteran who hasn't done this before, you are most likely eligible, obviously, especially if you're World War II or Korea.
Absolutely. World War II and Korea. World War II gets first preference, then Korean. And we will, on a selective basis, consider Vietnam veterans who are ill and need to make that trip.
Right, right. And it's a great organization, and they're, you know, the World War II veterans are, you know, I would imagine there are probably less and less of them on these flights, aren't there?
It's getting slim. It's definitely getting slim. We're actively recruiting very, very hard. To get these flights full, we want to obviously take as many World War II veterans as we possibly can.
And there are still people out there who don't know that this is available, and it's free to the veteran. There is absolutely no charge to the veteran. If they're, they also take along medical staff, medical personnel. I mean, this is a very well organized organization.
Right.
I'm doing my third one this year. I'm doing one in May. They're going up May 9th, he said. We're going up May the 14th.
I'll be
going up there a few days after they're there. And that'll be my third one, which I love every one of them. And that's the Space Coast one, spacecoasthonorflight.org, right? Yeah. And that's what ours is, like Rick's is over here. And, you know, it's great to see. And this is so cool. You know, they got theirs going on. We've got ours going on over there. I mean, that's what it's all about. And like Rick said, we need veterans. And so if people are out there and they've got a veteran, they know one that, you know, World War II, Korea especially, like Rick said, we need them. We want to take them, you know, and we'll find a way.
Well, it's a great day for them, too. You know, they have a guardian. Either they know somebody that wants to come, or we have volunteer guardians that'll you know, they'll donate $500 and they'll go along on the trip. And you get somebody with them the entire day that oversees all of their care for the entire day. We make sure they're in wheelchairs from the time they get off the plane to the time they get back on. Even if they think they can walk,
that's right.
We make them push their wheelchair so they have a place to sit.
Right.
When I went last September, it was great because Bob Dole is always there to greet them at the World War II Memorial with one of his aides. And when we were there, Glenn Beck showed up, and Glenn Beck had his patent battle flag with him, and he posed with all the veterans and took pictures, and it was really kind of a special day. So
you never know who you're going to run into.
You're exactly right. You don't. Some of them run into somebody that's on another honor flight there, and it was one of their buddies
that they had met.
That has happened. You know, you haven't seen this guy in a long time, and there they are with another state or something, and because it's across the U.S. It's not all 50 states, but it's a whole bunch.
It's 167 hubs.
Yeah. And so when you can see a guy that you fought with in World War II that you hadn't seen in years, and that has happened a few times, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Jennifer Wagner told us when she was in last fall, there was a moment when these two veterans saw each other, and they have buttons made of their military pictures from the day, and they looked at each other's button, and they go, I know you. But they didn't recognize each other. I mean, 50 years, right, does a lot to us, but it turned out it was what you were talking about. They had served with one another, and it's a great thing, and we invite you to please help out, honorflightcentralflorida.org, and right now's the time to sign up if you want to be a guardian, and certainly if you can't do that. And by the way, everyone who I've, and I've not had a chance to do it, but everyone who I've spoken to who has been a guardian got every bit, it seems, as much out of the deal as the veteran did.
Absolutely.
They're just so honored, and it's like one of those experiences you never forget, and you're glad you did. Mm-hmm. So if you're able to, I highly encourage you to take advantage of this opportunity, and it is an opportunity.
Yeah, privilege and opportunity, and I've got to challenge you right now, Chris, okay? The Saturdays. You don't work on Saturdays. Okay?
I am publicly right now.
You knew that was coming.
Right now, okay? And I know Rick's on board with it. I know he's got my back here.
Yeah.
We're telling you, it's your turn soon.
Okay.
Okay?
The challenge will be accepted.
You got April 9th or you have May.
All right. Okay. I got my choice this spring. And God bless Ed Reardon. He's been after me to do it, too. So I will take you guys up on that offer. And it is an opportunity. And once again, honorflightcentralflorida.org or Space Coast Honor. Or is it Honor Flight Space Coast?
Space Coast.
Space Coast?
SpaceCoastHonorFlight.com.
.com. SpaceCoastHonorFlight.com and HonorFlightCentralFlorida.org.
.org, I'm sorry.
Okay, Space Coast.
I was corrected quickly.
SpaceCoastHonorFlight.org and HonorFlightCentralFlorida.org.
Just so you'll know, Chris, okay, I want Rick to really be on you about going, and we're going to make sure it happens because Linda and I are going to pay your guardian fee.
Oh, wow.
Okay? Now, any more excuses?
No more excuses. All right. We will get it done this spring. Thank you. Thank you very much. That's very generous of you. And I'm going to be looking forward to it.
Okay.
I've never been to Washington, D.C., for one.
Wow.
And to be amongst that company will be a great honor for me.
When you come back from it, you're going to have plenty to talk about on your next show after that.
Yeah, well, I might have to schedule that Sunday off, too,
you
to
might
recover.
Have to,
yeah. But thank you. And once again, I look forward to that. And we'll keep updating you folks about this. But HonorFlightCentralFlorida.org and SpaceCoastHonorFlight.org. You will not go wrong helping them out. And most of us have veterans in our families, right? That serve, that may still be with us or may not. I know I have a World War II and Korea War veterans in my family.
Yep, my dad.
Yep. and a couple of uncles in my family. Yeah, served in World War II. Actually, one uncle, Gordon, he was actually out of the Navy, had served in the Navy and had gotten out of the Navy and was working for an oil company in Hawaii in Pearl Harbor on December the 7th. Wow. And was the first civilian admitted to a hospital that morning. He and his buddies saw what was going on, and they evidently were exiting the premises when a bomb went off. And for the rest of his life, he carried shrapnel in his left arm. I'll never forget, because his left arm was at a permanent 90-degree angle with sort of a claw with his two fingers. And he said that he told the doctor. The doctor said, you're going to be paralyzed. We can't get all that stuff out. So how do you want us to set your arm? And he said, just set it so I can drive a car and smoke a cigar, and I'll be good. So that's what the doctor did. And, of course, as a little kid, my brother and I loved lighting those cigars, right? But, yeah, and so we all have someone in our family that we owe a tremendous debt of gratitude to. And because, like we were talking about earlier in the show, if it weren't for these men and women, we wouldn't be speaking English, right? That's right. We'd be speaking some other language. Okay, the New Hampshire primary is tonight, and it appears as though Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump have victory well in hand, but we are now hearing that the polls coming out of New Hampshire are notoriously faulty. It certainly seems as though there's going to be a huge race for the runner-up in New Hampshire amongst the Republicans. Rick, you're in politics. You got any, feelings one way or the other as far as tonight goes?
I think the top ones will still be the top one. I would expect Trump. I would expect Cruz coming in second, probably Rubio third.
Yeah.
I think that would still... Then it's open. Carson probably fourth.
You think Ben will come out high? He's well liked up there. I know that. Those are the top three picks nationwide in most of the polls. Colonel, would you be okay with that order? Does that sound pretty accurate to you?
It just so happened that's the same top three I had in that order exactly.
Yeah.
And I think Kasich will probably be four.
You think Kasich?
I do. And I think Jeb Bush will slide in at five.
Well, Kasich won Dixville Notch.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Rick is talking about at midnight, there are three little townships up there, and they are villages, if anything. I mean, two or three households that live there. Yeah. And Kasich did win it. I think he won 3-2 in one town.
Yeah.
And I think tied with Cruz and Trump in another town at 999 or something like that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens coming out of there tonight. And New Hampshire is known for shaking up the races. So we'll see if that happens tonight. If Jeb comes in fourth or fifth, that's going to be a big night for Jeb, I would think, anyway. So
I think it's going to be interesting to see what happened to Christie, too, after the last debate. He was pretty strong, and he was pretty aggressive.
Yeah, it seems that. But, once again, the polling, we'll know after tonight. But if the polling is accurate, it seems like he hurt Rubio more than he might have actually helped himself.
Yeah.
And sometimes that happens in these things.
I don't know if you saw this afternoon, there was a scuffle between Rubio supporters and a bunch of protesters dressed up as robots.
And
protest up his performance.
I did not see that. Okay. All right, stay with us, folks. When we come back, we got some tickets to give away for the Old Florida Outdoor Festival. And we'll take your phone calls at 407-774-8255. That's Our little ode to Hillary Clinton there. Evil woman, ELO for you. This morning on The Morning Joke on MSNBC, they had a little sit-down interview with Donald Trump, and they did this little... they had several candidates there, and they were asking them, in one word, can you describe the candidates that we name? And they said Jeb Bush, and he said loser, which, by the way, is what Jeb Bush said about him the day before when they asked the same question. They asked him about Marco Rubio. He said confused. And then they asked him about Hillary Clinton, and he thought for a minute, and then he said, she's some kind of, let me, I wrote it down here. Hold on just a second. She is, and I quote now, a certain kind of evil. So I don't know if he's been listening to the show or not. If you are, Don, thanks. I don't think you would get too much objection to from around here to that. We were talking in the first hour of the show about the movie 13 Hours and how, ironically, she ran that campaign ad against Barack Obama. Who do you want to be there when the phone call comes in the middle of the night? And she wasn't there when the phone call came, and it wasn't even in the middle of the night.
We'd like anybody to answer the phone, you know, just somebody. That they didn't.
No, they didn't. And that movie makes it quite clear that the military was doing what they were supposed to do. They put a drone over that area. They were surveilling in real time what was going on, and they were preparing. General Hamm. Wasn't named
Carter Hamm.
I don't believe he was named in the movie, but you show, and I knew who he was. Is mobilizing assets. Everything is getting ready to do what we're supposed to do in a situation like that. And then at midnight, it all just stopped. All of a sudden, the buildup, the response, was evidently called off. And there you have the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, not even answering her telephone, and Barack Obama playing cards with Reggie Love. And that's according to the White House. So,
yeah, that's exactly right. You know, and I guess when you look at it, the unfortunate thing is that Sean Smith and the ambassador, the way they died.
Yeah.
And then you have guys trying to help, and they die.
Yeah.
But nobody wants to take any ownership for any of that.
Yeah.
Nobody.
No. And Sean Smith, by the way, he, you know, the ambassador chose to be there. The security guys, in a way, they chose to be there.
Yes.
Sean Smith kind of was the real innocent one in this, as it comes out in the movie. He was just a geek. Like you might find down at Best Buy.
That's what he was.
A guy who knew how to, you know, deal with communications and get the video games up and running and all that sort of thing. He was just a geek, and his life was wasted, along with the ambassadors over there.
Absolutely.
And they could have been saved.
No doubt.
And we now know that as well. Rick, have you had a chance to see the movie yet, 13 Hours?
I have not yet.
Yeah, well, yeah. If we can get Rick's mic up over there, yeah, yeah. I highly suggest that everyone do get, if you have a chance to see it in the movie theaters, do see it. If not, please get it when it comes out on DVD. Okay, before we go to the break, we got Al on the phone right now. Al, thank you for calling.
Yes, sir. I'm going to give you my pick of who's going to win tonight.
Okay, hold on. Let me get my list out here. Okay, Al, go ahead. I take it you're going to pick Bernie Sanders on the Democrat side. I already know that.
Bernie Sanders all the way to the White House.
All right. All right. Trump, you said.
Trump, there's going to be Kucinich.
Kasich? You said second would be Kasich?
Kasich, I mean. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you said. Okay, I got it. Okay, Trump, Kasich.
Trump, Kasich, and then it's going to be the Penguin, Krispy Kreme, Christie.
Chris Christie. Okay.
And then it's going to be a toss-up between Bubba Boy,
Rubio,
Slacken, or the spineless P-word.
So shall we say Rubio and then Ted Cruz?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you got Trump, Kasich, Chris Christie, Rubio, and Ted Cruz. And folks, you'll be delighted to know that the cake boss has endorsed Chris Christie today. I thought he was from New Jersey, though, right? All right, Al, you're in the contest, man. All right, good luck. And that's as good a lineup as any. Trump, Kasich, Chris Christie, Rubio, and Ted Cruz. All right, 407-774-8255 is the number. I see we're just about out of time in this segment. When we come back in the next segment, we got some tickets to give away. So get those phones out and get them ready. We got some tickets to give away to the Old Florida Outdoor Festival. We got tickets for Friday and now Sunday again also. And it's going to be a lot of fun, including pig races, dock dog diving, hunting and fishing demonstrations, shooting demonstrations, helicopter rides, and perhaps best of all, a barbecue and a chili cook-off. And that's going on at the Old Florida Outdoor Festival, which starts Friday, runs through Sunday. That's this Friday. We'll be out there doing a live remote broadcast. And the tickets are normally $20 each. So if you win a pair of these tickets, that's worth $40 to you. And it's going to be a lot of fun. Parmalee is going to be the main act on Friday. And by the way, the entertainment starts early in the day, so it's going to be all day fun. And the main act on Sunday is Drake White and the Big Fire. And it's going to, as I said, we'll give those tickets away in the next segment of the show. So get those phones ready. And the Shriners are going to be out there pouring beer out of the beer trucks. So yeah. You can stop by and see the Shriners and put a little something in the hat for the Shriners Children's Hospitals. They do a great job. And don't forget Honor Flight. That's honorflightcentralflorida.org or spacecoasthonorflight.org. Please go there, and perhaps you'll be joining me on an Honor Flight. All right.
That's what's going to happen.
All right. Sounds like a lot of fun. All right. We'll be right back with more of the American Adversaries Drive Time Primetime Show and tickets to give away. Okay, welcome back to the show, folks. That's right, you got the American Adversaries. We're here till 7 o'clock. And then don't forget, and by the way, this will be one of the last times you'll be able to catch Hugh Hewitt with his regular 7 to 10 p.m. our time show, because Hugh is moving to the morning drive hour. He's taking over for Bill Bennett, Bill Bennett's Morning in America show. Bill's going to step back and be a special reporter, special assignment reporter. And Hugh Hewitt will be taking over that show starting April the 4th. But in the meantime, you can still catch him here. He will be doing live New Hampshire election night coverage tonight starting at 7 o'clock. And as soon as the results come in, he'll be reporting those live. And, of course, he'll have great commentary. And he's been getting great guests on his show. Hugh Hewitt's show has really come up a lot here over the last year or so in terms of recognition and followers. And we wish him all the luck in the world as he goes to that morning 6 o'clock hour. And if anybody's wondering, yes, we could do a 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time show. No problem whatsoever. And, yeah, you could do it nationwide. We wouldn't mind we wouldn't mind a bit, would we, Nick? Yeah, Nick's got two thumbs up. All right, Nick LoCicero is on the bridge. 407-774-8255 is the number. Let's put Nick to work in there, taking down your names and other information, because you want to go to the Old Florida Outdoor Festival. Which, by the way, Rick Brown just told us what happens to the pig that loses the pig race. So what was that again?
The loser of the pig race is the guest of honor at the barbecue.
Gets to hold an apple in his mouth, even. If you would like to go to the Old Florida Outdoor Festival either Friday, we have two pairs of tickets for Friday. And we got two pairs of tickets for Sunday that we'll give away today. Four pairs total. We came across some extra tickets for Sunday we didn't know that we would have. So if you would like to go to either Friday or Sunday, the headline act on Friday is going to be Parmalee, and on Sunday it was Drake White and the Big Fire. And those tickets are worth $20 each. The pair is worth $40 to you. Call us right now. We'll just go ahead and take the first phone callers. All you got to do is tell Nick until the tickets run out for Friday. We have more for Sunday, but these are the last two pair for Friday. Whether you want to go Friday, where we'll be doing a live remote broadcast, or Sunday. Those tickets are up for grabs right now. Put him to work. 407-774-8255 is the number. Once again, we still have in the studio with us Colonel Danny McKnight, and he is the author of the excellent book, Streets of Mogadishu. Everyone should have a copy of this book in your library, and I use it as a reference book because it's It's what I call a primer, if you will, on what it takes to be a leader, what to look for in leadership, what the good quality. There are 12 qualities of leadership that you talk about in the book, and they're all relevant and pertinent, especially as we choose a leader of our nation. You know, a commander-in-chief, yes, but also a leader of the citizenry. And you want to have someone who has experience being a leader. That's one of the main things, isn't it, Colonel McKnight, is that someone have experience doing that sort of thing?
Well, especially when you get to that kind of the levels we're talking about of leadership for people. Yeah, you got to have experience, and, you know, you don't learn it overnight, you know. And there's no such thing as somebody that was born to be a leader. Yeah, we're all born. Some are born with the ability to lead. Some are not. But you still learn how to lead, and you learn how to lead, hopefully, from mostly good leaders, but you can learn an amazing amount from a bad leader. You can learn what you don't want to do and what you should not do, and then you basically develop your own leadership style. It's really that simple. It's not rocket science, Chris, because if it was, I couldn't do it, I promise you, okay? It's pretty simple.
Don't sell yourself short.
You know, and we've got some people that need to learn how to lead before we put them in positions that they shouldn't be in, and I think we have seen that for almost 7-plus years now.
And the other part of Streets of Mogadishu is about how the leadership that existed at that time of the mission in the White House was wanting. It was lacking. Mm-hmm. And so disrespectful of the military that I know you've mentioned this on the show before, but we haven't talked about it for quite some time. This was after the mission was over. I believe you were invited to the White House for, a Veterans Day event?
Veterans Day event.
And you had an audience, you and some of your colleagues had an audience with the president in mm-hmm. the Oval Office. Do you mm-hmm. care? You want to care and tell people what happened?
Well, you know... The first person I met in the Oval Office was the late Les Aspin, who was the Secretary of Defense at the time.
Les Aspin.
And, of course, he failed, and unfortunately he failed too, which had an impact on us. But President Clinton was going to ask some questions. Third question he asked was, what was it?
It had to do with UN. The UN leadership, yeah.
Yeah. He asked, do you think that we can, what about working with the United Nations? I raised my hand very violently because I wanted to answer the question, because they failed over there. They failed, the UN did, their forces, to do much of anything, in all honesty. If it hadn't been for the 10th Mountain Division, which was with the UN, but the other forces, they didn't. Anyway, I answered his question that we should never be made to work for the United Nations. We should always be willing to work with them, but never to be made to work for them. After I said that, which I thought was a pretty simple statement, and I figured that was a simple answer, he looked at me, and he looked at General Shalit Kashabili, who was sitting beside him as the new chairman of the Joint Chiefs, who replaced General Powell, and he said, I don't think I understand what you're saying. And so I, in my mind, thought, well, no kidding, that doesn't shock me, but anyway.
So then you told him about an incident over there.
And then I told him about an incident that occurred over there in terms of what the UN did not do in securing a position around the airfield, which we were inside the airfield, and they're therefore providing security, and they weren't doing very good, seeing how the three guys one night that was in a security position was being fired upon, but they were not returning fire. Hard to return fire when you have a weapon, but you have no ammunition for it. So I explained that to him, that incident happened. He then looked at General Shalit Kashabili and said, do you think that really happened over there? Well, that's the commander-in-chief, my boss, that just questioned me like I made something up.
And, of course, you were there and saw for yourself.
Yeah, yeah. And what really irritated me the most was I'd met some World War II veterans earlier that morning that were also at the White House for Veterans Day event. And one of them I met was a gentleman in 2nd Ranger Battalion in World War II that scaled the cliffs at Point du Hoc.
That's Normandy.
And when the president said what he did, he wasn't attacking me personally. He didn't know who I was. He really didn't. I had introduced myself to him by name that morning, which I thought he might know who I was, seeing how he put me in combat. But what he really bothered me the most about was, and this is the thing I've never forgotten and never forgive him for, is he disrespected everything I stood for and everything that World War II Rangers stood for. And so, yeah, he's not the kind of leader I want. And I, you know, he's supposedly a brilliant man because he's a Rhodes Scholar.
Well,
but he's less than an adequate leader, plain and simple.
We now know he got kicked out of Oxford because he assaulted a 19-year-old girl there.
It's amazing how some of these things come about,
yes,
aren't they, Chris?
It's one thing to be a Rhodes Scholar. It's another to actually graduate, huh?
Right.
So don't want to give him too much credit. But that just shows the lack of respect and the lack of consideration. You would think that he would have had one of his staff members brief him on who was going to be in his office that day so he could show proper respect.
Yeah.
And obviously he wasn't interested enough to do that. All right, let's go to the phone lines. And by the way, if you're getting a busy line, continue to try to call Nick, 407-774-8255, if you want a pair of tickets to the Old Florida Outdoor Festival. They are up for grabs right now. But in the meantime, we have Mike on the line. Mike, thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thank you, Colonel McKnight, for your service. You were awesome in 2004 with the hurricanes. I just wanted to tell you that. But the I've been thinking a lot about different things in my mind.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute right there. What does he mean you were awesome in 2004 with the hurricanes?
He wasn't talking about the Miami hurricanes. He was talking about emergency management, right?
Yeah, yes. Absolutely, sir.
You were part of the emergency management team over there?
In Brevard County.
He was the emergency management team.
I did not know that.
Yeah, wow. Absolutely.
All right. Okay. Well, okay. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Just wanted to clarify.
Just talking about leadership, I wish one of the Republicans would get up and say, you know, I've been carefully watching President Obama for the past 7 years, and what I'm going to do is when I come across any kind of fork in the road, I'm going to think, what would Barack do? And then do the opposite. And he would go down in history as the greatest leader of all time. That's number one. The thing with the UN and different, I was thinking this morning that, you know, it could happen that if a Democrat gets elected, we'll be looking back at Barack Obama's administration as the good old days.
Oh, don't even think it.
I'm serious. You know, it's that bad. It's that important that people, you know, kind of get facts. And the thing with the UN, I read constantly. I was brought up, I was a paper boy, and the founding fathers, they said, read everything and then make your own decision. So I'm always reading it. And UN soldiers from other countries are raping kids and doing all kinds of stuff, and you never hear about it.
Well, sometimes you do, but you're right. They're oftentimes caught up in scandals and crimes and things of that nature.
And then the people that have diplomatic immunity you think Washington's corrupt. I mean, it's got nothing on the UN, and these things, it's just, you know, I don't know if people don't want to hear that their leaders are corrupt, and just, you know, I always knew that Clinton was a Rhodes Scholar, but I always thought of him as a road whore scholar. And so I just, throw that at you.
All right, we appreciate it. All right, thanks, Mike. Appreciate the call. I hopefully we don't get to the point where we're nostalgic for Barack Obama era, right?
You know, we were talking about Bill and his legacy.
Right, yeah, if that's what you want to call it. Criminal record is what I call it.
Well, you know, speaking of criminal record, if she's not indicted, I think it's really important that we continue to bring out these stories about Bill and that people really understand, especially the young people who didn't live through it, they really understand the moral character of this man. Because a lot of them, through their parents, are saying Hillary wouldn't be a bad choice because she'll have Bill to back her up. Now, think about that for a minute.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Talk about the criminal family.
Yeah. Well, you know, I believe it was in a speech yesterday. It might have been over the weekend where he actually accused the Bernie Sanders campaign of being sexist. And I'm thinking, well, I guess it takes one to know one. Hey, Bill, right? You know, I mean, the irony in this campaign, just the whole campaign is full of ironies. And
look at Madeleine Albright's comment.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
right? Talk about sexist. And they're running a war on women campaign.
Right.
And she was the ambassador to the United Nations when we were dealing with Somalia.
Mm-hmm.
So I thank her, too, for what she did. Oh, that's right. She didn't do crap
either. Nope.
My language. Sorry.
Yeah, well, she was dealing with the UN. But, yeah, it's... it's a situation where Hillary Clinton is obviously got huge problems. The FBI today confirmed what everybody already knew, but it's actually pretty significant that they confirmed that they are conducting a formal investigation into her emails and the server. Usually the FBI doesn't announce that unless they're on to something. They don't come out and say, we're investigating you, just to later on and say, oh, no, by the way, there was nothing there. Usually they announce to the world they're investigating you to sort of warm you up to the fact that something else is coming.
It's there, yeah.
That they know something is there. Does that mean that this Justice Department would follow through on an indictment? May not be necessary, as long as the FBI issues a report that is comprehensive and truthful and explains the laws that appear to have clearly been broken. I mean, you're going to be seeing General Davis Petraeus at an event coming up here in the not too distant future.
In June.
Okay. Obviously, he just got put through the ringer, mm-hmm. right? And they just let him know that, okay, you can keep your 4 stars. I mean, they had that hanging over his head. And for her to be able to walk and skate free, it just all doesn't add
right.
up.
It doesn't.
But I think Rick's got a point, though. If for some reason the indictment doesn't come, or even if the report doesn't come, we need to stay on top of this. And from that angle, because not only was Bill Clinton a cad and a sexual predator, but she was the enabler. She's the one, which is what I thought was so ironic about Madeleine Albright's statement, that any woman that doesn't stand up for another woman has got a special place in hell waiting for her. Well, there's a whole bunch of women that Hillary Clinton not only did not stand up for, but helped trash.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
She attacked all his girlfriends.
That's right.
Yeah, the bimbo eruptions and the bimbo patrol and all that sort of thing. And, at some point you got to say she was part of the problem. And that is part of what Donald Trump has done when she called him sexist. And he said, you want to talk about sexist? Well, not only is your husband sexist, but you enabled him to do it.
That's right.
And all of a sudden there was silence from the Clinton campaign about that. Because the truth be known, she is every bit as guilty as he is. Mm-hmm. Because she was an accomplice. An accomplice in sexual assaults, probably rape.
Yep.
And it is something that we need to keep hammering over and over and over again. Okay, we got to take another break. When we come back, we'll wrap up tonight's show. Once again, if you want to get in on our Pick 5 contest, this is the last call for contest entries. Who are going to be the top 5 finishers in the GOP primary tonight? New Hampshire. Don't forget, Hugh Hewitt, live election night coverage starting at 7.
Battles of doubt. No matter how far down you have them, they just spill out. So I hold tight to the edge of the night, and I fight on and wait for the light, and I hold fast to the year and the light. Hope that tomorrow is fine, and I'm standing here when the sun comes back around.
The sun comes back around, the theme music to the movie 13 Hours. Once again, we highly encourage you to see the movie. Colonel McKnight doesn't normally see these type movies, especially in the movie theaters. Of course, with the Mogadishu situation, if you've seen the movie Black Hawk Down, you'll know what I'm talking about. But he did go to the movie theater to see this movie. So while it's still in the theaters, please take the opportunity to see it. When it comes out on DVD, take the opportunity to buy it and watch it again. Colonel, before we get out of here tonight, you wanted to give a shout-out to a friend.
Yes, there's a young man in New Hampshire that's listening to us tonight.
All right.
And a couple of his friends, and wanted to say hi to Jay. Jay, we're glad you're listening. Hope you listen more often to Chris down here. Not especially if I'm on, but especially just listening to Chris. So hello to Jay.
All right, we appreciate that. And don't forget, Jay, vote tonight and vote often. and once again, the New Hampshire primary, you'll get live election night coverage. As soon as we go off the air, Hugh Hewitt, there'll be the news break, of course, and then Hugh Hewitt will pick you up and take you live with election night coverage, probably until we have some decisions. It appears as though Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are in good shape, but we won't know until the votes are counted tonight. And once again, we still have a couple of pairs of those tickets to the Old Florida Outdoor Festival. If you want to get them, call right now at 407-774-8255. All right, we were talking about leadership skills, and Rick, you're a businessman. You're in local government.
I was.
Okay.
I'm a recovering politician.
Recovering politician.
I've been out 14 months now, and I'm just able to cut back on my Purell subscription.
Weaning yourself off of it.
I am.
But how important is it to possess leadership skills in those positions?
Well, it's especially in business. It's just critical. If you don't have the integrity and the honesty and the just leadership qualities. I mean, that's really kind of hard to quantify, isn't it? But I think you're born with it, or you have to learn it from somebody who is very skilled at it. You know, it takes mentorship, and it takes encouragement. It takes a lot of patience, and you know, that's really what we try to do in our business. We've got 120 employees. And we've got four distinct management teams that manage them. And finding these young adults in their 20s, early 20s, mid-20s, and taking them from the biggest thing they can think of doing on a Friday night is seeing if they can drink themselves into Saturday morning. And you take them through the skill levels of becoming a manager and managing groups of people and being responsible for a $1 million business. It's really rewarding, but it's also very trying. And a lot of them just don't have what it takes. And you have to be able to make those decisions to cut and run or to invest more if you can see a glimmer of hope.
And, of course, it wouldn't be worth it if it was easy to do. And, Colonel, you go around the country giving seminars on leadership to police organizations, to businesses and all sorts of organizations, do you not?
Yeah. Had a great year last year, 144 times.
144.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah,
that's a lot of travel time.
I think Linda wanted me out of the house personally.
Yeah. Is she a booking agent?
Yeah,
you got it. 200 times this year.
but you're right, and I'm blessed to get to do it, and I get to do it with audiences that are interested in listening, and it's like Rick said, you know, some people just have it, the ability to do it, but they still need to learn how to do it,
right? How to apply,
and then some don't, and. If you fail, you just need to move on. And these people want to learn how to lead, especially if they know they're going to have the opportunity to maybe be a leader. And it's one of the most fun things I can imagine getting ready to is traveling our country and speaking to different groups.
And Colonel McKnight's website is DannyMcKnight.com. That's where you can order copies of his book, Streets of Mogadishu, and he will personalize, autograph those copies for you. That's DannyMcKnight.com. And if you're interested in having him speak before your group, go to DannyMcKnight.com, and yep, you can find out information about it there. And once again, I highly recommend everyone should have a copy of this book because, as Rick was saying, you know, in business – you know, in politics, in any aspect of life, it's important to have and or be able to recognize good leadership skills because you'll need them and you'll need to know who possesses them to put yourself in a position to excel in life.
Now, you know, in politics, you have to have those things and you also have to have a certain amount of bravery and integrity because you really need to put yourself out there and really not care whether you get reelected. And, you know, that's the problem with not having term limits, and that's the problem with having an establishment government like we have in D.C. and why we have the go-along-to-get-along strategy that we have working with Barack Obama these mm-hmm. days instead of fighting him tooth and nail.
I know it. And it's got so many people so very frustrated. And, you know, a lot of people say that the Republicans have created the monster that we know as Donald Trump.
They have.
Because he's out there saying, I will do what they won't do. And now Ted Cruz is saying it too, but the advantage Trump has is that he's not in the Senate. He's not in the House. He's not in government per se. He deals with politicians, but he's a true outsider in that sense.
Well, he'll say what they want because he doesn't need to get reelected.
Right. Exactly. And he's for a lot of people, that's a breath of fresh air. We'll see how far it takes him starting tonight. So once again, let me just remind you that Hugh Hewitt will, starting as soon as the news is over, tonight, live election night coverage. He'll be in New Hampshire, and he'll have some great interviews, I'm sure. The election night results, which should start coming in pretty shortly after 7 o'clock when most of the polls close in New Hampshire at 7 o'clock tonight. Of course, tomorrow night we'll have the winner of our Pick 5 contest and commentary regarding the results of tonight. So I certainly hope you folks will tune in tomorrow night for that. Once again, I want to encourage you to go to honorflightcentralflorida.org and spacecoasthonorflight.org and help out in any way that you can. Make sure that any veteran that you know is aware of this program and is aware that they can take advantage of it at no cost to them. And if you can be a guardian, join me and be a guardian on one of these flights. Colonel, Rick, Linda, Tim, and everyone out there, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Stick around for Hugh Hewitt.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
News, opinion, passion. FM 105.5, AM 660. The Answer. WORL, Altamont Springs, Orlando.